Off the Ball, GAA.
I mean, there was a lot of made of Congress at the weekend, and yes, a lot of different things came out of Congress. But for me, to be honest with you, I won't say it's off the ball. I think it's off the wall in terms of something like that coming into hurling.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Hurling Pod.
On Off the Ball.
With Apple Green. Making every journey better.
You are welcome along. It is the Hurling Pod. It is with thanks to Apple Green, our sponsors for this season, helping you relax, recharge and enjoy the journey ahead. It's quite the weekend just gone. I don't know how many people at the Danes Ford medal celebrations were watching Kilkenny suffer their worst defeat since the 1950s. We had the Hurling Pod Derby and it only went one way. Galway scoring 35 points against Kilkenny in Salt Hill. Galway are safe after that win. And Kilkenny are scratching their heads a little bit. Derek Ling said an unacceptable performance from his team. Limerick, meanwhile, bringing Cork back to ground as well. Aidan O'Connor, Colin O'Neill, the Bull O'Brien hitting the goals. An 8-point victory over the league champions there. We'll talk about Galway's young guns, who are pretty impressive. I thought Aaron Nyland was excellent on Saturday night in Salt Hill as well. And after Clare's win over Wexford today, the second promotion place in Division 1B is in Dublin's hands. I'm sure Scale's brother-in-law will be delighted about this going into the last weekend. They beat Carlow. They joined Clare in going up. The Wexford manager, Keith Roster, admitted on Off the Ball earlier today that basically he reckons their hopes are gone. And he said being in 1B for next season mightn't be the worst thing for Wexford as well. A breakthrough year for Kildare in 1B as well. We've talked about the records, going up, first wins, all that type of stuff. Well, win number three for them today. They've beaten Carlow, which means they're staying in the second flight for next season. And Laois made it 6 wins from 6 in Division 2, which rubber stamps their move straight back up. A swift return for them into Division 1B for next season. Paul Murphy, how were the medal celebrations in Danes Ford?
Yeah, it was great. Obviously enough, we had our camogies getting their medals as well. So all around, yeah, great night. Marty Morrissey was down there as well. You're laughing at me, Skell, because of my voice, is it?
I just got an image, Murphy, for you with the tie around your head dancing away to, I don't know, Dancing Queen or something like that.
Yeah. No, we had Marty Morrissey down as well, so Marty presented it, so it was good crack. But Ash, look, you know, these things are they're a whole kind of community and parish affair, like, so it's yeah, great crack. And it was just down the road from here in the New Park, so all was good. Had a easy stroll home in the end.
You walked home.
I had to take one of the shoes off me on the way home because I had a blister on the heel. I said, oh, jeez. So I said, some lad saw me walking down the road with one shoe off. I said, that fella isn't bothered now. But good crack, in fairness.
So while the Marty party was on, did you have the game in Salt Hill on your phone on the table at the same time?
No, when we were arriving, sure, what time did the match, 5:15, the match was on. Most people were kind of arriving as the match was maybe on about half an hour, might have been half time, and then they were taking like photos and stuff, like team photos, getting all that stuff out of the way. So I don't think very many people saw the match. I only watched it back today, but obviously, you know, word was around that it was like all you had to do was hear the scoreline to know that it wasn't a good performance. So we didn't see it until today. Maybe someone else had it on the phone, but yeah, majority of us didn't get a real good look at it.
Skell, you must be like a Cheshire cat. You were talking last week, you know, this is a big step up from where Galway were this time last year. They're now blooding all these young players. A few Galway people tweeting me last night as well that they're optimistic, if not necessarily for championship this year, but for championship over the next few years because of the young lads who've come in who are getting league time at the moment. And like, this is a big step up in performance, even from the Offaly win and from the Waterford win. That was really, really good stuff on Saturday night.
I think for the future, I don't know, as I always say, after many years of doing this pod, because it feels like it runs into one the other, but this is the bit, like, I was coming on the show this week thinking, is this the best position Galway have been in for a long time? And I know we reached semi-finals during the course of the pod too, but there was never really the feeling that we could actually win them. You know, I was always more feeling in hope than expectation, because we're coming up against the juggernaut that is Limerick. But I have great hope for the future now, because I was probably shouting loud, you know, nationally, Will, that I wanted these young lads to get into the team because, first of all, you know the potential, and second of all, if the sooner they get the taste, the better they can adapt to it. Now, I will admit, I am surprised at the pace at which they have adapted. Truth be told, I didn't think that they'd take off as quick as they've shown, and I'm really pointing the finger towards Aaron Ireland. I didn't think he'd take it like a duck to water. Now, I'll have to say, there's a semi-asterisk beside the two performances with Kilkenny and Waterford, because Murphy agreed with me, and people at Waterford agreed with me, like they were very poor both days. They were really, really poor, so it's very hard to get a true judgment of where the youth are at. But all you can see is good signs. Like, and I always write four words when it comes to team preparation. Well, it's physical, mental, technical, and tactical, right? Those four areas you cover. And I'm looking at the Galway team now, and for the last number of years, there's always been two, if not three, where we've been failing. And I'm looking at last night and said, yeah, we were good on the four. Because I was we're fit. We look fit and strong. That's the first thing. Last year, we looked lethargic. I'm not sure, was that more of a rugby-based SNC or that way to you? But this year, we look fit and strong. So, like, you know yourself, fit body, fit mind. You can move yourself because you have energy. And then you have the likes of the movement in the forwards, I thought was excellent. You take the first 20 minutes alone, five guys showed up and put up. And it was very hard for me to understand who was playing where, but it was structured. So everyone knew. It didn't really have a sign of chaos. If Conor Whelan showed up a full forward, that's fine. Darren Neary, that's fine. You know, let's say, who else was in there? Sure, Rory Brock was in there for a minute. Ryan was in there for a second. So it was like they were doing all this interchanging, and it was all symmetrical, and it was all really, really synchronized. So it was good to see. And it was a kind of a really complete performance between backs and forwards. Other days, one group would outclass the other. But I will say, I used the word asterisk a moment ago, it's good for Galway's future going forward for longevity, but McKinney, I was so surprised after they had such, you know, they had goodwill, good grace in my mind after the Limerick performance. Because those same young players who I thought performed really well against Limerick, against the good Limerick team, have just seemed to they fell off a cliff. I can't understand it. And even the big players, I'm so surprised with Mossy, because you remember this time last year, he was burning it up. He was burning it up, and he was rolling the right way in the championship. Now it's like a bit of a concern. And maybe this is a one-off. Maybe this is like, you know, more where they have to go into the dressing room like he did in 12, and just piece this together again and, you know, get it going. Because every team has this blip every now and then. Every team in its history will have a blip or a performance where they know it's well below substandard. It's not even poor, it's just that it's terrible. And it's not the true reflection of them as a team. And, you know, that could set them in the right way into the future. But I have to say, very impressed with Galway. Barra King Kenny. I don't know who you picked for Kenny yesterday.
Was it 10 points in for King Kenny across the day. So I appreciate, Murphy, you've watched this in retrospect, where you knew what the result was before you watched it. But you know, Derek Ling said unacceptable. They were his words after the game. There was apparently illness in the camp, but he was saying the 15 lads who took to the pitch were perfectly okay. They were 100% fit. You can't blame that. What do you put that performance down to? Because, you know, they were soundly beaten even with the wind.
Mm. Oh, yeah, completely. Like, what do you put it down to? It echoes to me of, like, you know, 2 weeks ago, Liam Cahill, what he must have been scratching his head thinking, like, going, where did that performance come out of? It's sometimes something that can just ambush you. And the thing is that I think for a lot of teams would be looking at is that these performances, okay, they can happen. And like when you're part of the dressing room and that happens, you should be taking it very hard. Like you should feel almost embarrassed that this has happened and you're really disappointed and all that. And like today should not be a good day for you. You should feel those things if it really means something to you. But then, you know, straight away you start going, okay, first of all, you nearly want a match to happen straight away. And we said all these things after Tipperary Limerick, that you nearly want a match straight away just to get back to it. Like all these players, whoever's playing the next day, but as a panel even as well, even if you weren't up there in Salt Hill on Saturday, as a panel you should be going, Jesus, if I'm playing the next day, even though I mightn't have been on the bus for the match on Saturday, if I'm playing the next day, geez, I'm going to run myself into the ground. Because all these things were absent on Saturday night. Like, there was no work rate. There was no bit of spirit. There was no bit of grit. As Derek said, it was passive. Geez, if anyone ever calls you passive on a field, it's a terrible thing. Because there's so many examples where, you know, Kilkenny were, they were 5 yards behind their man. There was sometimes balls poked into spaces. There was no Kilkenny lads there. There was one example that I looked at. Tom Monaghan had a shot in the 32nd minute. He got it out around the, let's say, the number 10 position for Galway. And he got it, and there was a few lads running in the area. And then there was like two or three Kilkenny lads, two or three Galway lads. And Monaghan was expecting contact, looking to pop it off for someone. And everyone just ran past him. And you could see him almost standing going, geez, nobody came to me there. Okay. And he just took a shot. Now, he hit it wide, but he kind of went, usually someone will hit you there and give you a tackle. And what I actually did today was for about 10 or 15 minutes, I just had the Limerick Cork and Kilkenny Galway match just on, like, let's say the RTE player and TG4 player side by side seeing it. And like the intensity of tackling from the Limerick forwards was above the intensity of tackling of the Kilkenny backs. So even like there's a gulf already in terms of intensity or lack thereof. Derek and the management, like, there's nothing you can take from this game by way of positives. Like, absolutely, you know, Keane Kenny, 6 points from play, 10 points overall. But you can't take that forward. You know, Keane Kenny can go and do that one day. Other players can go and do it. But as a group, you can't take anything. And I think you kind of, you wouldn't even look to take anything positive if you could. You just have to lean into the negatives of this one and go, this is unacceptable. And that's Derek's words. It is just an unacceptable performance. So, you know, look, I think a lot of people today are saying, oh, this marks an occasion of, you know, Kilkenny aren't going to. I wouldn't agree with that from the point of view that I think if a few performances string together, that is where I look for that. Okay, well, now we have an indication that something's going to happen. If you look, Tipperary had their performance against Limerick. Waterford had their one against Cork. But each time they're looking for a response. So Tipperary look for their response against Waterford. If Kilkenny in 6 weeks' time go to Pier Stadium, and like it's a carbon copy of the match from Saturday, if they go and there's not, if we see a lot of the similar things there, then you start really getting concerned. They have an opportunity now to respond and you know, finish out the league on a positive note. But look, as Saturday night is a standalone, there was nothing you could put your hands on to say, this is good. There was very little, I suppose, really good, anything good done on Saturday night.
It was a very un-Kilkenny-like performance, Gael, is how I would put it. Like, we were trying to work out, you know, when they're taking a beating like that. It was Pat Nolan who came up with the one that they lost to Wexford in the 50s, and since then, this is the biggest margin that they've ever suffered. Like, there's been bad days. I mean, I think of the 2019 final, I think of Limerick maybe running away with the All-Ireland final a couple of years ago, but generally, Kilkenny, even when they're not at their best, stay in the fight. Like, the kind of non-negotiables are always there from Kilkenny. This was a team that kind of sunk with the ship at the weekend. It was a very, very un-Kilkenny-like performance.
Yeah, and I think for anyone that listens to this, like, it's nothing got to do with personnel. You know, it's like a team decision. So it's not the fact that TJ wasn't playing or John Dine didn't start. I don't buy that whatsoever. It's just like this mentality that seeps into a team from the start. So the first thing I would always associate with Kilkenny is that they're a forward unit. And I'm glad Murph actually mentioned there, is usually one of the hardest working units that you'd see of the whole 15. And what happens in is the pressure that their backs come under is alleviated to a degree by the efforts the forwards, their own forwards do. So I just took, like, I watched it again yesterday, I watched it last night and I watched it again today, just to see, because I do take stats in real time, right? And see, I'm improving them basically, to be honest. But I track contested clearances basically, because Kilkenny got cut out 9 times in the first half alone. Now bear in mind, Kilkenny had the wind in the first half. So if you get cut out by a defender, with the wind, something is not right. You know what I mean? So, and I brought it back to contested clearances. Like, Galway players were contesting, they were stopping Kilkenny backs coming out with the ball. That's what you always attribute to Kilkenny forwards. And the contested clearances for Galway in the first half alone was 4. Contested clearances for Kilkenny was 29. That's absolutely colossal. 29-4. So that means Galway players were under pressure, clearing the ball 4 times. Just 4 times.
Yeah.
Which I just can't. Like, and I'm looking at this thinking, no, that's wrong. That can't be right. I must be reading this incorrectly. But it wasn't. I just wasn't. You know what I mean? And I just think Galway utilised Killian Traer really well, Park Manning really well. And I do think as well, it probably contributed to the fact that Keane Kenny got a couple extra shots. And I'm okay with that. There was no goal threat. You know, there was no real running down our throat heading for the 21. I'm really fine with that. If Keane Kenny pops up in the middle of the pitch and shoots from 70 yards, I'll say that's absolutely okay with me. I don't want Keane by his porting through us, you know, for fun. But it just wasn't like Keane. And it's hard to put your name or put your, you know, if you were to nail your colours to the mast, why? You know, I would never, in the history of this podcast, in the history of Kilkenny, I would never question why Kilkenny trumped the way they did. And we said before, last week, I said about Waterford, was the travel, was the night time, was the pitch. I put all them aside. I didn't know about the illness will now, to be honest. Maybe there was a sickness in the camp. I don't put it down to personnel. If you're on the pitch, and we've always heard, I remember Jackie saying it, if you're fit enough to be on the pitch with Kilkenny, you're good enough to play. So there's no excuses, which I never hear excuses from Kilkenny. And I'm just putting it down to a really bad night, bad performance, where they're just going to chalk it off and learn from it. But what you want to do is stop that at source. You don't want it to become, you know, a regular occurrence or a habit, which I'd never associate with the boys down there. So the next game is extremely important. Don't worry about relegation or safety. Just play your game and perform to the way that the Kilkenny players will perform in the past. I think that's the biggest thing for them. I don't think there's probably going to be talk from that dressing room. Murph, correct me if I'm right. They don't give a shit about staying up in the league. They want to get themselves ready for a championship. It's 6 weeks and they're going back to Pier Stadium again and they've only got one realistic game left, you know, of high intensity. Because you can't emulate that in challenge games. Everyone knows that. They've got one game of high intensity, and if they don't bring the juice, then I don't know, maybe it's different. That kind of seeps into you a bit.
Oh, yeah.
If a performance like last night seeps into your next performance, oh, Jesus, that's not good. It's just not good. Like, it's just not good for the future, because you're trying to grasp onto positive elements of your play to build on for the next 6 weeks. You're picking four or five elements to say, yeah, we're really good at this. Let's get better. And then you're looking at a few things to tweak to bring them up with it. Things that you weren't exactly happy with. But if your list is seven or eight items that you're not happy with, and you've only one thing you're happy with, that's just tipping the scales too far, coming up against top-level opposition straight away. And the thing is, in terms of teams, you often hear Premiership soccer teams and rugby teams, every professional team, they'll say the fastest method of improvement in a professional team is recruitment. That's the fastest method. So you take the Galway players I'm talking about, the Nyland, Rory Burke, Josh Ryan, you know, all the ones, you can end them off, right? Galway have instantly improved. And I think it's used to be exuberance. And I'm wondering, where is that going to come from Kilkenny at the minute now? Because you can't depend on TG all the time. You just can't be onto the well for nearly 20 years. You know, and I was going through again today, who's to come back that'll make a considerable difference to that Kilkenny team, both mentally and physically. So I'm looking at Adrian Mullen, I'm looking at TG Reid, and then I said, sure, Mossy was on last night, Donnelly was there, Owen Cordy was there, Kinney was there, Jordan Malai, Deegan, I went through them all. I said, there's not a lot. Mikey Butler will come back, you know, and Owen Murphy. That's it. Now, remember, that's four or five Murphy that I've named that you'd say are definites. After that, I'm not sure. So where the performance is going to come from? It has to come from somewhere for next week. It has to come from somewhere, else there's a bit of bother.
Well, look, if you can't get motivated for Tipperary, you won't get motivated for anyone if you're a Kilkenny man. Just for both of you, and Murphy, you can take this one first. Obviously, there's a lot of conversation around this, that maybe actually what we're seeing at the moment is not Kilkenny putting in one-off bad performances. Maybe this is Kilkenny who are now in decline right now. What would you say to that argument? You hold on there for a second. Let him answer first. As I see Scahill squirming when I say decline. This is a conversation at the moment.
Well, I suppose if the conversation wasn't... I didn't see it massively being had last week after Cork or after Waterford. Sometimes I think after, let's say, huge defeats or big moments like that, people lean heavily in one direction and could be proven to be corrected in 2 weeks' time. Like last year, I remember leaving the park last year after Tipperary match. And again, Kilkenny didn't leave a hand at Tipperary, and it was really disappointing. I remember people walking away going, this is absolutely terrible. Absolutely, you know, we're not going to do anything. And then a bit Limerick. And it's kind of, and then after a bit Limerick chatting to people, people were very suddenly really optimistic. Like I said, probably, I suppose, about 2 minutes ago, if I see a few more performances together where there's no discernible kind of uptick in effort and work rate and all those things, then you kind of go, right, what's happening here? Because at the same time, I know, Scale, you're saying there's not many people to look back, but when I look at the starting 6 forwards that potentially could be there for Kilkenny, I still look at that, and obviously in Adrian Mullaney's ads come back, you go, that's still a fucking savage 6 forwards to have. When you look at the backs, you go, okay, Hugh Lawler isn't there, but there's a really good set of 6 backs there to be had as well, and midfield. So it's like there still is the core of a great team there. So I wouldn't be in the camp of leaning too hard in one direction after one result, because I've been part of them. Like, you know, I've been part of no more than when and Skelton and the boys bet us in 2012. After that, people were like, that's it, done. You know, you're finished now. And suddenly, over the course of a couple of weeks, you get things back on track. So the jury's out for me at the moment. And I think if Kilkenny finished the league strongly with a good performance in that little intervening period in the way into the round robin stage, once they get things back going, they get one or two results, suddenly everything's fine again. So it's I think it's more of a progressive thing that you'd have to decide of over a couple of months instead of just going one result, that's brutal. Because like last night, again, if they ran themselves into the ground and they were working all over the fields and tackling, and Galway beat them by 18 points, I go, Jesus, we just don't have the skill and we don't have the personnel. It's very hard to read into anything when there's no work rate present on the field. You can't even read tactics, you can't read anything. So when all that is absent, you kind of go, well, it's a work rate problem, it's a tackling problem, it's all that. When that's not there, that is tough. But if that was present in the next game, and again, like you said, Will, Tipperary, there's no better occasion for these lads to go and have a real good crack and get a feel-good factor back into it. But no, look, the jury's out, and I wouldn't join that camp of thought at the moment or that train of thought.
Askel, while I was saying that, you looked like you were in physical pain at the time. So go on, what's your response?
Well, I just think people get very emotive after a big result, whether it's a big draw, if it's a big loss or a big win. There's suddenly their opinion becomes, you know, very influenced or determined by that exact result. And they don't obtain an objective report, which is like that the Kilkenny have been, you know, they've been the kingpins of Leinster for the last 5 years, or they're heading for 6 in a row. I could be wrong there. I think it's 5-1 more for the last 5 years, heading for 6 in a row. So there's massive pedigree there. And a trait I would always look at in a team is how much effort their defence are putting in, as and the forwards. But like last night, Galway were, every ball that went into Galway forward was 70-30 in favour of Galway. So that goes back to the contested clearances. So that made the job of the Galway forward so simple. That's not a trait, Kilkenny. And that's an easy fix with. That's not a hard fix. I think people have to understand that from a technical perspective, it's hard fix tactics in the game. It's hard fix technical items, right? Physically, they're in good shape. It's not as if Kilkenny are dragging away or carrying weight. They're in good, absolutely good shape. It's just simply mental. That's all it is for me. And a mental thing is the fastest thing you can fix. You can fix that the fastest element, right? But no, don't get me wrong, it can also go wrong very fast. But I think we're going to get back training, there'll be a bite, a real bite about it. Because I'd say now, Derek Ling will put up starting players and the thing will be blank. Do you know what I mean? It'll be just carte blanche. Whoever of the best 30, whoever gets the jersey, gets the jersey. And it'd be ravenous. That's the way I'd be looking at it. So I wouldn't be, I look at it, that's for the fans to do, the supporters to say, who have, maybe haven't been involved in these teams. That's no disrespect. But like we've been up and down, let's say, right, you know, good times. It's important not to get too high when you win and too low when you lose.
Yeah.
You know, to find that right balance. And the trouble is, supporters at times, they can't find that right balance because they're overly emotional on that result. And then it becomes a bit of talk. And I looked at Kilkenny Twitter. Do you only go on to your algorithm that's in Twitter or X, whatever you call it, and if you click one tweet, I see other tweets start popping up. And I see some of the things that local people, Murph, like, and I say they had Kilkenny flags in their headings. Like they were cutting shit out of the team. Like, and it's like, folks, it's the first week in March. Can everyone just calm down a small bit? I mean, it just happened for 2 months' time. Okay, we'll revisit. But like, that's a Galway trait, Murph. That's not a Kilkenny trait.
Every year.
I'm even just saying to people, and I say it loud, chill out. If it happens in 2 weeks' time, and then in 6 weeks' time, okay, then there's maybe a bit of a pattern. Then there's an issue, right? And there's a greater issue. But if they come out now and play class against Tipperary and beat Tipperary, I don't want people to go say, we're going to win the Ireland. No, relax. It's the same way. It's the same thing. So,
yeah.
And other teams in other provinces have been guilty of that too in the past. When they're going perceivably well, they get way too high too fast and suddenly they get hit in the mouth.
I think what proves your point there is, like, I was thinking about this from Micheál Donoghue's side. Like, a year ago, facing Limerick next, and he obviously would love a savage performance against Limerick, and whatever the result is. But Micheál Donoghue has the other side now, where Kilkenny's performance aided in flattering Galway. Galway were really good and they were brilliant, and they turned up and they went about their business. But Micheál Donoghue won't be going, Jesus, I don't want our boys thinking we're 18 points, or not say 18 points better than Kenny, but that we've arrived now. He still wants them headed on an upward trajectory. So what he's probably doing now to lads is, patting the back, brilliant, but bringing them back down to earth. Because if you look at Cork beat Kilkenny by 4 points and then Galway beat them by 18, if you were to say Galway are 14 points, I know this is just ballpark, but Galway are 14 points better than Cork. Would you say that? No, you wouldn't say that. Okay. So then it indicates towards a downward trajectory of Kilkenny's performance in that 2 week period. So Micheál Donoghue, like that, it's fantastic for Galway that there's a big lift and people are going brilliant. Because after losing the first two matches, you're thinking, oh Jesus, will this be kind of similar to last year? Will we fail to get going? And now suddenly they're at a stage where, you know, waking up Monday morning, you're like, Jesus, we're in a serious chance for the entire year. Micheál Donoghue will now be going, I don't want these lads to take their eye off the ball for the Limerick match. I want them to have a serious, serious crack.
But it's the best mission, though, isn't it?
Oh, it's brilliant.
I'm in a heap of WhatsApp groups here locally, right? And you already have some lads now who played for Galway, right? Have texted during the day, said, you know what, pull half the young lads, basically throw the Limerick game. I'm saying, bullshit. Because he doesn't want the trajectory to drop, you see. You know what I mean? We won't face Limerick potentially in Ireland.
It's basically like insulating them from a Limerick.
Yeah, and so what they're saying is, if you've got with your starting 15 and you're your best 15, right, and then Limerick end up clipping you, which is very possible. It's very, very possible. They've clipped everyone. Then does that really kick you in the cheek and set you back? I'm saying, throw out your best 15, go for it. Absolutely go for it, right? And see where it takes you. And if you get beaten 7 or 8 points, fine. Do you know what I mean? But go for it.
I don't know why I love that so much, the way you said that. Limerick end up clipping you. They end up clipping you.
They could very well clip you.
It's just like, just could happen to any of us.
It's fucking the truth. I agree. It's happened to all of us.
Absolutely.
I'm with you, though. There's absolutely no reason why Galway shouldn't try and get to a league final here. No reason.
Like, come here. If you go after week two, Will, and someone said to you, here, I'll give you a semi-final against Limerick at the end of the day, last week, you take it. Fuck yeah. I'll take it after week two. But it's just, I think that's more of a geographical issue up here, Will, in terms of the mindset. Someone else saying, oh, it's all the Limerick game. Do you know? Insulate the young players. Nyland's guess, like, Nyland hasn't been touched in the last 2 weeks. Like, there hasn't been a glove putting him, right? So the minute Kyle Hayes or Sean Finn gets near him, you know, let's just say it like shit to a blanket.
I don't know whether I'm hysterical from lack of sleep after last night or something, but I love the idea after a great performance against Kilkenny, there's lads from Gullicone, right, throw the Limerick game straight away. it's such a ludicrous thought, like, but...
what's this idea of, like, Micheál going into the dressing room at some point midweek next week and going, sorry, Burke and Nyland, 2 year flying so far. Thanks for your help over the last 3 weeks, but not going to play against Limerick because we want to lose.
Oh, but come here. Do you think there was logic? And I know Cork are nearly guaranteed, but they are guaranteed to a degree, right, to be a league final. We worked that out last year or last week with our permutation.
Avoid defeat against Offaly, they're fine again. Limerick avoid defeat, they're in the final as well. So go on.
But did you think their team was very, very... It was questionable. Do you think it went against all the messages they were putting out to the public over the last couple of weeks?
A Limerick supporter friend of mine texted the minute that the team dropped on Friday night's gala, and he made the very fair point. I don't see Alan Connolly playing, and they've just changed 7 players. Is this O'Connor trying to send out some kind of message? Like, I don't know. They've used over 30 players in the league. So maybe the thinking is, when you are on the edge of getting to the league final and you know you've gotten already relegated awfully at the end, why not give a few lads the white heat of battle of the Gaelic grounds? We'll talk about that game in a second in detail, but there was loads of intensity in that game as well. Maybe it makes sense that you change up half the team. But you're trying to say is they shouldn't have changed as much as
that. I don't know. Like, come here. And every manager is different. Every coaching team is different. Just my ethos is when you have things rolling well, it's very hard to get things rolling well, Will. When you have things rolling well, keep the foot to the pedal. You know, I'd be thinking, and make one or two changes if they're necessary with regards to injury or form, whatever you want to call it. But keep the pedal down and keep it pressing because it's very hard to get it going. Do you know what I mean? It's very hard to get it going. It's very easy to get stopped. And I was just looking last night saying it went against like the messages that they were putting out over the last couple of weeks. And it was grand for 45 minutes, which we'll touch on again. But I said, is that nearly an excuse-building exercise? Oh, we didn't have everyone. No, we didn't have a flat 15. We're missing 6 or 7. That's fine. Limerick had the 13 players. Limerick just, again, they turned it in the last 20 minutes and took away with it. So, you know, even his interview after Ben O'Connor's, I'm wondering, you know, you've changed your tune. He's still saying like that he was very, very happy with the performance, delighted with the performance, you know, but unhappy with the results. But I'm thinking one is kind of contradicted to the other.
Maybe he was consistent with that message as well. He said it in the telly. Owen Downey's interview, did you see him? I saw someone's point out he looked like he'd just been mauled by a mountain lion when he was on the interview afterwards as well, with blood coming down his face during the middle of it. But like O'Connor said, happy with the spirit shown, not necessarily happy with the result. Said the same to Tommy Rooney after the game when he spoke to us and off the ball as well. So it was a very consistent message he was giving out. But I do kind of wonder how he'll feel when they are breaking the tape down in the last 15, 20 minutes of the game. Just before we get into that, Scale, I did want to give you a moment here for Galway, because we have been accused that we're the Kilkenny Hurling Podcast and all that type of stuff, right? But when it comes to these talents, and you're saying this is exciting, maybe as you've been about the team in a few years. So, like, Cathal Mannion again gives a free scoring display and played really, really well. I mentioned Rory Burke, mentioned Aaron Nyland, 23 points between the three of them across the course of the 70 plus minutes. And again, you've like Rabbit coming in again. He's looked really impressive at different times during the league. Conor Whelan again looked like he was back winning his own ball, scored a couple of lovely points when he ran at the Kilkenny defence as well. Like, how excited are you now? Because to me, I'm not saying they're going to win the All-Ireland, right? But there's shades almost of like Tipperary last year.
I knew you'd say it, Will.
But there are, aren't they? Like, you were talking about all these young lads coming in. There's a freshness, there's a new blood, there's experienced players like Mannion, still the glue holding it together. Again, I didn't say they're going to be going to win the Lee McCarthy Cup here, but is there not something similar to what Tipperary did last year, where they're coming out of the league and they found all these new players in key positions?
Yeah, no, okay. In that aspect, yes, that we have new players. But see, we knew about these players. I knew about these guys the last 6 or 7 years.
Sure, Liam Cahill knew about those players last year.
And I agree with you completely. I don't want to... Yeah, I'm tentative at the moment. In the same way that I don't want to get too... Like, for Kilkenny people to get too low after a loss. I'm not getting too high after a win. It's one win against Kilkenny. You know, if we beat Limerick next week... Or sorry, was it 2 weeks a week? Next week.
2 weeks.
Whatever it's come, right? 2 weeks' time. Jesus... things will change my mind a little bit, right? And then if we win, go on and potentially win league final, I lose the shit. Will, that's what I'll do. I lose the shit. That's what I'll do. I'll go crazy. I start singing that song, "Go All Your Back," right? But until that point, I'll remain calm and neutral. I'm not into this crack of like in American sports where you'd be jibing each other before the game starts. No, I wait till the game finishes. And if we win, I'll jibe you. If we lose, I'm not saying a word. So I'm not going to say go or like tip at the moment. And I think if you rewind back 12 months, and even rewind back, you know, 7 or 8 months, nobody in the place would give Tip a chance to Ireland. That in fact. Mm. Nobody would give him a chance to Ireland. It's only until the very...
I think with the exception of the Twitter user Tipper back, and that's a fact, I don't think...
That's fine, but you don't see it. In terms of evidence, I don't think anyone would say, yeah, Tipper definitely back and heading to Ireland. I think if you had the semi-final stage last year, and you had, who was it, Cork, Dublin, Tip, Kilkenny, in the hit?
Yeah.
I think everyone was ranking Tip third. Truthfully, they were, like. You know, so it's not as if that they were this, you know, juggernaut coming out of Munster. They weren't. So, but they won their Ireland. They got things right and everything clicked. And you're right, they had the right balance of youthful exuberance and experience. And the experienced guys they have are top class. So, like, if you're trying to equate, you know, Chip and Galway, Cathal Mannion, Noel McGrath, you know, or even Jake Morris, you know, Ronan Maher, you know, Park Mannion to a degree, but we have a lot of places to cover still all the time. Yeah, it's grand having, you know, our young cornerbacks going playing well there in the league game. I need to see them in the heat of battle when they're 1-1. Do you know what I'm saying? Because our second arrival defender was there all the time last night. So if we had 50-50, 1v1 going to Kinney, forward and back, we always had a second defender arriving soon. That wasn't there for Kinney last night. So in terms of intensity, it was at probably, you know, 5 points below, where 5 strokes were below the championship. And like, I would put it better with anybody that the winning margin between the two teams in 6 weeks' time will be maximum 3 points. No, either way. So, here you go. So, I try to dodge that question as best I could.
You dodged it reasonably admirably. Before we move off this, by the way, the title of the podcast is still going to be "This is the most excited I've been about Galway in years."
Yeah, move off to Galway. Yeah.
No. So, Murph, the floor is open to you. Blow Galway up before the game in 2 months' time in the Leinster Championship. How good are Galway right now?
Galway are definitely headed in the right direction. I think the best way to describe Galway now at the moment is that they have something about them at the moment. And like that's deliberately kind of vague because they haven't arrived yet in terms of going, right, this is what we're about. Like they're a team that's in the process now of they're headed in the right direction. They've unearthed a lot of really good players, bolstered by the likes of suddenly now we can see Conor Whelan a little bit freeing up because these other threats are in around the place. And there's also, like, people are talking about a Rabbit, and they're talking about Nyland. It's not just Conor Whelan anymore, so the pressure isn't on him necessarily to deliver, which will be brilliant for him, but also shows there's threats around the place. So they have lots of really good things. Defence, they're looking really well as well. They're moving the ball really good. Mannion is peerless as ever, so they have lots of really good stuff. But at the moment, again, the team of what Sam and Stephen Skell have both been saying is that thing of don't get too low with the losses, too high with the wins. This is great, but like, again, exactly as Skell said earlier, like Limerick could bounce off you, you know, in your next match. And then suddenly you're like, okay, yeah, we're heading in the right direction, but we don't have this and we don't have that. And there's a different kind of audit going on. Like you're starting saying, oh, well, these are all the things we're missing. But at the same time, then if Limerick do hop off you, you're, again, don't be getting yourself too low. There's a lot can happen over the next 6 weeks, but there's great positivity around Galway hurling at the moment. And they seem to be starting to get the support train up and going as well, which is great. By the time, like, we're 6 weeks before round robin, and we get into round robin, there's still a long way to go then until we get to Leinster final stages. At that stage is then, that's really the only time that it matters around the provincial and in Munster at the final three that you really need to be shown. And teams are building. We've seen plenty of teams go out in the league perform really well. By the time it gets to round robin, lots of things change, and then suddenly the year falls off a cliff face. But Galway are headed in the right direction. And I think Galway people, I understand where Skell is coming from at the moment. It'd be foolish to build yourself up too early, too quickly right now. I would be very excited if I was a Galway person, but I'd be given...
Stop it.
No. But you literally interrupted me as I was about to say. I would be giving this team the space to perform. Like, as in, if they go out and a few of the younger lads have a bit of a tough day against Limerick, hey, that happens. Give them the space to grow and learn after that. Yeah, but don't be jumping on the back going, oh, this is the same old Galway now. Do you know? So don't be fickle. they're headed in the right direction, I'd be very positive. But again, the thing I would temper it with, and it's probably a good thing that Skettle would like, is that I'd be saying they haven't arrived yet. They've put together a few good performances, literally the last three, but they haven't arrived yet. So if it looks like they can, and looks like they could have a real big impact on this championship. And I think what will suit this Limerick team as well is that they look like they have the hallmarks of a team that if they did get to Croke Park, they'd be very dangerous.
Yeah, okay. So before we transition off this game, just want to pick up on one of the transitions from last week, which was, picked up by Colin McCarthy on the Spotify comments. So again, I would love to argue that this was comedic timing on my part where I put the ad break in. But he says, listening to the podcast, an ad comes up for Viagra. Straight afterwards, we return to the podcast and Paul Murphy comes back saying, that's brilliant. Paul Murphy was saying, that's brilliant, after the clip, the little video clip that we had played. And I thought that was a perfect place to put the ad. I had no idea, unfortunately, that a Viagra ad was going in at the same time. I would love to think that I had done that deliberately, but unfortunately not.
So it looked like I indirectly endorsed Viagra, was that it?
It did. I'm sure the Viagra company, whoever the external company were, or Spotify, or whoever puts in that ad, they'll be delighted with the endorsement they got as the pod came back in. Apparently, it's all you need for Valentine's Day.
Yeah, Murph, if this is American politics, they'd be asking you, do you endorse Viagra?
Yeah, do you endorse? Yeah.
Ask the question, do you?
Do you have shares? Do you have shares in it?
And one, I think, for Fuel on the live comments on YouTube last week, who said that I desperately needed a shave, that I was getting particularly unruly. You will see that I'm now reasonably clean shaven on the back of your comment last week.
Very good.
Sent a photo to herself mid-shave, and the exact response was, oh no, what have you done? So let's just say the reactions have been mixed.
Is it like when Homer Simpson shaves and he just looks like, I don't know, what would you call it, an egg?
I think
I'm going to get the head of a dick.
Thank you, Skell. As we keep the Viagra team going.
Every 6 minutes and 22 seconds, can we edit it out, please?
Oh, no, it's in there. It's
my mother-in-law listens to the show. I'm a mother.
And she's going to enjoy that, and she's also going to enjoy that. I think the biggest issue is I just look about 14 years younger when I shave. So,
you do, though. You do, in fairness.
Yeah. Anyway, she's not a fan, but it'll grow back. It could be worse. Anyway, let's get to the second game. There was definitely a lot more intensity about this. Was looking at Ray Boyne's stats when it comes to turnovers. So Limerick won the turnovers, you won't be surprised to know, in that win against Cork. 34 versus 27. Pretty put a lot of pressure on Cork when they were coming out with the ball themselves. The Colin Neal goal comes pretty much directly from a turnover, and then the pass in by Keane Lynch to set it up basically from there. But it was a moment that Cork could have avoided during the game. When it comes to the volume of shots, as it turns out, Cork actually had a better scoring percentage. They scored 64 of the 31 shots they got away. Limerick got 38 away, scored 57. The reality is that the goals made a massive difference during the game. So Limerick 3 goals to Cork's none. Aidan O'Connor scoring 111. He duffed the penalty, didn't he, Skell? I don't know if that was a deliberate bouncer the way he hit it.
I'm looking at the penalty the way he takes it now. Sorry to get too encyclopedic on this now, but he comes from a very straight line. And I'd be critical of Patrick Collins' the goals, because if the penalty taker lines up directly behind the ball, he or she is directioning it, let's say, with precision as opposed to power. So you can afford to wait in your line, not dive. You know what I mean? Mm. If a penalty taker is going at an angle of 60 degrees, he or she is going burying it. So it's like, the way O'Connor does it, I think it's very, very good. You only know in the last second where he's putting it. And he knew he was going to his right as he's looking facing the goal, and he just did enough. It was perfect. I'd say he wanted to lean more towards the right, towards the post to bounce it, but he got away with it. I think if Colin stays on his feet, it becomes a save.
That's like a Panenka, if he stays in his feet. He would have just stood there watching across the
pad. Yeah. But like, he's electric, isn't he, at the minute?
He really is. He's flying. Absolutely flying. Like, that's one of the things, Murph, before we kind of dig into the detail of the game itself. Like, some of these younger players that Limerick were bringing in, they're so much in the style of the players that they're replacing when they come into the team as well. Like, we've talked about the machine that Limerick can be before, but it seems when these parts come in, that was kind of my thought during the 15 minutes when they were in that flow state, whatever you want to call it, for the last 15, 20 minutes. These young lads were coming in, like Hugh Flanagan just coming in, just pops it over the bar under pressure as well. It seems like as if these guys are really well placed to actually replace the players they come on for.
They are, yeah. I suppose you've summed it up correctly there. Like that, it's just they're clicking into the setup there just seamlessly. And there's so many lads coming in. Like you're keeping an eye on Aidan O'Connor at the moment, watching him going. Right, looks like he's going to be at, you know, centre forward or somewhere in the half forward line for the year on the freeze, all that sort of crap. And then there's other lads just coming in around him, banging over points, and you're saying, well, what about this fella? How is he going to fit in? Like, yeah, exactly. There's lads just popping in, and I think what it is. One of the things that strikes me is that these Limerick lads in particular have such an understanding. They're playing such a great attacking brand of hurling at the moment. We all know how defensive and, you know, in terms of tackling and different things, they're really good at, and Limerick have been excellent at it over the last number of years. But their attacking brand of hurling, I think the fact that so many players understand the way in which they want to attack, like the setup, how they move the ball, they're attacking through the centre so well, and these lads are running onto balls. Like I think Aidan O'Connor scored a point off the hurley. I think it was even. It's kind of between the 65 and 45. I just vaguely remember it in my head, but he was coming through that area that Limerick seemed to be attacking through so much at the moment. Usually we talk about that area of being a combat zone, of being very hard to get through. You know, all your the bulk of your players are committed there, but they seem to be able to move the ball between, like, it's almost like triangles where lads are hand passing the ball around and there's runners going through. They always have two options, one or two options off the shoulder, and find themselves then breaking lines against opposition, whereby they're now running that goal straight down the barrel of goal and popping scores over. So I think what makes them all look so similar is the fact that they've all fit into such a style that Limerick are playing, not one individual player is playing a certain style. Like we'd associate, let's say, we'll go back to Conor Whelan. In my memory of Conor Whelan, he plays it full forward, he comes out, he wins the ball, and he kind of wheels around and takes on his man, and his man might be hanging out of him, but that's kind of what happens with Conor Whelan. Whereas these Limerick forwards are running onto goal from deep, they're taking the ball off the shoulder, because they're taking it fast, they're taking it at pace, they've now broken line, and they now have an opportunity to pop the ball over. So I just think there's so many of them understand what they're about, what they understand the style they want to play, and they're so interchangeable that they now have produced so many options to fit into the plan that, like, there's lads coming through there that realistically won't play a starring role in championship, but you're looking at them going, these lads are probably on any other county, inter-county team in the country, they're that good, you know. So it's pointing towards Limerick heading back to that really dominant force that they were, go back a couple of years where there maybe wasn't a little bit of wobbles in championship. Where they're building towards at the moment, because it's potentially very dangerous for the rest of the country, but it's exciting to watch. Like, that game was brilliant on Saturday. It was full of intensity. Like, it was in a different stratosphere now to Kilkenny Galway. The intensity, and give credit to Cork as well. Like, you know, there was a lot of great stuff that they did well as well. I know Ben O'Connor would be disappointed with the result, but it really came down to Limerick's class in the end, that by 10 minutes ago it was 10 points in the difference. It was purely down to their style and their, I suppose, the depth of their panel. Let's give the rest of the panel a bit of credit.
Skell, I don't think I've ever seen a forward who enjoys a diagonal ball coming in and a scrap for it quite like Aaron Gillan.
Enjoys a scrap, like, for it, yes.
So the penalty comes from it. But it wasn't the only time during the night where he was delighted to have a one-on-one or a one-on-two and the ball is coming in and he will play or hurl before the ball comes in. He will do whatever possible to make sure that he ends up with the ball in his paw by the end of it. Like, he seems to absolutely relish doing that.
Did you ever see that great documentary, The Last Dance, Netflix? Do you know when they talked about Dennis Rodman, how he studied the way, how he became so good at rebounding is just he studied all the angles and got himself in the right position. I think if you draw a 360 line around the defender that Aaron Gillan is marking, he knows how to attack every element of space or every part of that 360 degrees. He's just down. So if he's behind you, he's going to catch it over your head. Remember that great save Murphy made years ago, Paul? That was Gillan catching the ball over your head. So Gillan is lethal behind you. When he's in front of you and the ball's coming high, he's a master at making it look like he's getting hounded. But he's doing the hounding himself.
Yeah.
So it's not as if he's getting dragged and pulled in the jersey. He's getting completely, you know, assaulted, where they need guard intervention. It's the way he makes it look. And he's a master at it. But in the same breath, if you remember the first half, folks, do you remember the ball that went down the sideline and he just picked it on the run?
Yeah,
that was sublime. And I was just thinking, Murph, how many players in the country can physically do that? You know, and you've only maybe five that can do that, as they can run and pick it up seamlessly where they don't break stride. It's just, so he's got a huge element of class, but he's got a major dog in him as well. He can fight for the ball high, he can fight for it low, and he's just top drawer. So then when you consider you've got him in there. Peter Casey didn't play last night. Then you've got the Bud O'Brien, who I've never seen, like, you know, beaten for the ball, essentially. I've never seen a back, now I'm up at the correction, of course, come out in front of him, take the ball and take off, right? He's always in front, and you can be hanging off him, like baiting a cow, like hanging off him, right? And he will take it, and he'll stay going at you. He's just awesome. So you've got the right, and you're right, Murph, about the forwards and the players they have, let's say. I just don't think people really watching, you know, will appreciate the coaching that's going to that team, will appreciate the level of coaching that team is producing. So, like, often we see, you know, tactics. Most teams in the country, right, will show you on match day 20% tactics. Yeah. I estimate it. 20% tactics, which is coaching. 80% is usually physicality and individual skill, right? Player as you see it. Whereas I honestly believe the Limerick team is like 80% coaching. That what they've built in terms of their physical prowess, their skill that they always have, is just operating at such a high level that the coaching brings it to a point whereby, if I put Aidan O'Connor into the goal team right now, would he be as effective? I would say no. I would say no. If I put him into Kenny, I would say no. Even though he'd automatically be, you know, always nearly best forward in form, Barry Cahill, obviously. But my point is that the team works so well effectively. And this is back to front now, mind you. And it's always the case with you look at Limerick, and I'm looking at Nicky Quaid. How many times have you seen him just pause the puck out and send it down to the 10 or 12 channel, and there's a Limerick forward run onto it? Like, in open space. And you're saying to yourself, I've seen that fucker move for the last 8 years, and they're still getting it. Like, you know, that just seems, and it's just screams of a team that's moving synchronized. You know, and you're right, Murph. Conor Neal comes in, you know, Dunnick Adolig, Ed O'Connor, Adam English, they all come in the last couple of years, and they don't skip a beat. Whereas any other county, if a big player, if a player come into a big position, and I'm talking about an 8 or 11, sometimes there's a bit of an adjusting period where the team might suffer slightly and they readjust. No suffering here. Where you can put Keane Lynch at 8, 9, 11, 10, 12, put Aidan Connor all the same things around. Hegarty, we didn't really see him last night, but it didn't matter. It just didn't matter. We didn't see Peter Casey. You know, we don't know who'd have his best game, but the Limerick, you know, it's a juggernaut. I keep saying it. It's a juggernaut. And if they get their act together, like mentally, because they didn't have it last year, there's no one to beat them, let's be honest. They're just not, like. And I will respect people from Cork and Tipperary listening to this podcast thinking, sure, we'll beat them. But if Limerick are at their mental peak, you know, I'm talking about mental peak, because physically, they're always at the physical peak. There's no one to beat them. That's it. Yeah. And I think the genuine people and hurling people will agree with me. You're biased if you think, no, we'll beat Limerick every day of the week. But that's why I said earlier on, there's a strong chance that we get clipped. We get clipped in a couple of weeks. And I'm talking about fucking 9 or 10 points. This could happen, like, you know. I believe it's the fastest method of learning. Go with your strongest hand. And if your strongest hand is proven to be not strong enough, they'll show you where you're not strong. They'll show you if you're missing a wing back or cornerback or certain style of play, they will show you where you're going wrong, and that's the fastest method of improvement. Don't hide from it. Go take it.
Mentally, it's a big response as well. Like, you're putting 8 points on a team who've been flying in the league so far this year as well. They come to your patch and you beat them pretty handsomely and set yourself up for a league final. As Skell said, they need to avoid defeat against Galway in the last game. If they're going to qualify, we'll have Cork and Limerick again, almost certainly, Murph. The Cork performance then for you, you were saying there was probably a lot of positives from the take from it. Like, the scoring dried up a little bit in the second half for them. That's maybe the one disappointment for them. And obviously Limerick finished the game out quite strongly. But what was good from a Cork perspective and a much changed Cork team for you?
What was good about them? To be fair to Cork, again, something we talked about in the first game was intensity of tackling or lack, where Kilkenny weren't tackling. In this game, both sides, like, the intensity was really, really good. I haven't seen the stats in terms of Cork winning rucks, but they were very much involved in the rucks. Like, they weren't overly just dominated by Limerick. Tommy O'Connell at midfield has been really good, to be fair to him. Again, I think we mentioned him in the Kilkenny match that, you know, he was really kind of putting the hand up for a jersey. Like, wouldn't be the biggest fella in the world. He's not, certainly not small, but by God, he was involved in a lot of good work, a lot of good tackling around that middle area where there was a lot of big hits going in. I thought he was really good as well. You know, I think the one thing about this is that Cork have tried, I think Tommy Rooney said it when he was interviewing Ben O'Connor, I think was it 32 or 35 players started in the league, which is a huge stat. I was wondering if when Skehill was talking there about Ben O'Connor, like, you know, did he put out a bit of a team, maybe kind of going like, we're shadow boxing coming towards Munster, or was he sticking true to what, to start in players. So I think it was Damien Callahan, I think was the 35th, we'll call it, player he started. I think what Cork will be happy about is that they stuck to that. If that is a big thing that they want to do for the league, they stuck to that, and come hell or high water, they went with it. From their general play, it was in line with the way they would normally play. They just couldn't maintain the pace of, they couldn't maintain the race staying with Limerick for the 70 minutes when they didn't have their full complement on the field. So what I would say is that extended panel, they probably learned quite a bit about that in terms of, if they're getting verdicts on some of those players that they've been saying, okay, you've hurled well maybe against, you know, Waterford, or you hurled well against Kilkenny, against Limerick, you know, do they know a bit more about those players now? Because when the likes of Alan Connolly and these boys have to return, you know, that he'll be starting. So I think they learned a little bit more about a few of them players as well. It was Kieran Joyce at midfield, I think, correct in saying that, wasn't he? And then as well, like, I think one of the things that they'll be, I know you're asking me what they improve on, but I think one of the things that that Cork will be looking at is that point of how do they deal with Gillan and how to deal with Shane O'Brien, because, you know, Gillan caused a lot of problems in there, and we associate this Cork team with being very physical. We associate them with being sitting back, defending quite well. But they still did find themselves isolated in a certain amount of situations. I even felt at one stage Shane O'Brien was probably harshly done for a free out. I think it was the 17th minute I made note of it. I don't even know what it was for. But Sean Stack kind of blew it. I didn't know, was it travelling or what it was? But he was getting mauled. I think it was a free out. But so one of the things I'd be looking at for Cork would be saying, you know, that was an area where Limerick really did bully him. I think, you know, I mean, 3 goals is 3 goals at the end of the day. But, you know, that route one ball going in towards Gillan, going in towards Shane O'Brien, if they're facing that now again in Championship in a couple of weeks' time, like, that was an area that Limerick reaped a lot of benefits. So, look, positives from Cork. By their own standards, they've had other games that they could take a lot more positives from. But nonetheless, it was just a case where Limerick were better on the night. And do you know what? If I give them one positive, when the game went out to 10 points, with 10 minutes to go, they didn't throw in the towel. So, like, if we're saying, like, with Kilkenny, for example, when it went out to 10 points, it then went out to 15 points, went further. This group of Cork boys didn't do that, which is maybe something previous times would we have been critical? We certainly would have been critical of them, maybe with the toughness or the manliness in terms of that they were stylish hurlers. But they didn't let the game get away from them. And, you know, they fought back into it, and they got 5 points, I think, in the last 5 minutes, something to that, trying to think of the numbers, but something to that effect. So those were the few areas, I'd say, for Cork that they could take positives from. But I think in general, they won't want to lose ground too much to Limerick in terms of taking any sorts of defeats. And Limerick were by far the better team on Saturday night.
This one for both of you. Skell, you can take it first if you want. Is this now becoming a repeated issue, though, that sometimes Cork do get isolated in the full back line? Like Tipperary did it in the All-Ireland final last year. They got loads of change off ball into their full forward line. Obviously, we saw Limerick were kind of happy enough to send a few in and to try and take on one-on-ones and so on at the weekend, just combine it, and it bore fruit. And we're holding Cork by the standard of wanting to win the All-Ireland Championship at the end of this. Is that an area that they need to shore up if they're going to lift the Liam McCarthy?
You see, I wouldn't say you need to shore up the full back line per se, the one-on-ones. I think you need to shore up your defensive structure as a whole.
Okay.
I think when you go back to the All-Ireland final with Limerick and Cork, was it back in 22, lads, or 21? Do you remember when basically Limerick blitzed them?
21, I think.
21 more. Sorry, thank you. So the Cork backs got pulled all around the place. And I thought in the years after that, they were steadily learning how to hold their position, because it's not just a one-on-one issue. It's the fact that they're, you heard me quote the other day, the second arrival defender. So I'm okay, let's say, personally speaking, with a one-on-one battle inside. If my second defender come back, which usually are 6, 7 or 5, one of those guys is there in time to put in a tackle, put in a hit number. So it's when that person is not there in time and it becomes a real one-on-one where he or she can pick up the ball, turn you, turn the other way, and there's no second contact. That's an issue. So from a structural perspective, I'm looking at Cork, and I'd be critical now, perspective, that they're 5, 6, 7, don't have it nailed down yet on how to move up with the play and move back with the play. So I think 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 are the five most important positions that they can pick for them as a whole to go forward in the championship. I'm okay with 2, 3, 4. I'm okay with, you know, 10, 11, 12 all the forward, because they're really with pace up above. That's the shooting work. And then they've got pace in 10 and 12 to come back. Right, but 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. If they can nail the relationship with those five and be able to sit back a bit deeper and push forward, of course, and then have the second arrival defender come back, the one-on-ones don't become an issue with. You have a second man there, because look at Shane O'Brien's goal last night. It was primarily one-on-one, to be fair, you know, where he was allowed to get the ball, turn his man, take him on, in by the in-line goal. That can't happen. And if you look at the goals last year, like even the Ireland final, they're one-on-ones with no second rival defender. There's no second contact coming back there. So I know, Murphy, you're a great cornerback in your day, but even you, let's say, it's very hard for you to mark 50 yards front, left and right without a second man coming back to assist you. You're a sitting duck, because if you have players up the far end, again, contested clearances, and they can put the ball on a sixpence in the grass in front of you, and bear in mind, the forward always has the advantage because he initiates the move. So the back always has to react. And there's a certain level of reading, of course there is, but the back 99 times 100 initiates the move, so he's a half yard in. Just a half yard. And that's enough, because they can gather the ball, and they're so good nowadays. We've seen Seamus Lennigan Glenn over the shoulder with crazy shots, scoring them. That's so hard. So your second rival defender has to get there. As soon as the ball goes in, and let's say Glenn is touching it, and it's just as he's getting his hand, boom, you got to get him. You got to hit him. I don't say hit him, but you got to put contact on him so it makes a 2-on-1. And he then can't get the ball out to his wing forward. There has to be another 2-on-1 out there. So that's if I'm looking at Cork. There's loads of positives to look for. Of course there is. But from a systematic perspective, if they fix 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, getting the position right in-game, the 1-on-1 doesn't matter then anymore. It doesn't matter. Not a fuck. Hmm. You know, that'll get fixed out of the game.
Right. What do you reckon, Murph?
That's my coaching perspective now, Murph, that I have to say in that. But,
no. Give us your practical all-star cornerback experience here.
Multiple all-star.
In terms of what do Cork have to do to mitigate against that? Mm. Look, the thing is, and Skell covered a lot of the points there, is that all a cornerback or a fullback wants is a 50-50 fight. That's all they want. So, like, most of the time, the easiest direction you give to your outfield players is don't let the player coming through get their head up so that they can look where they're going to pop the ball into. That's because then it becomes a 70-30 battle or an 80-20. When you're playing against the likes of Gillan or Shane O'Brien, who have an understanding with their half back line in midfield as to how they even want the ball. Not that they say, listen, I'll only receive it in this way. But when Dermot Burns or when any of them lads look up the field and they say Gillan moving in a certain way, and Gillan does a thing where he goes behind you, he'll go right into the end line and he'll drift left and right. And generally he'll do one, let's say, drift right before he bolts off left. And he's very fast. He's kind of deceptively fast. We don't often talk at the pace of Aaron Gillan. We talk about his skill and we talk about his toughness. He's very fast. So when a player possesses all those characteristics, what you're saying to your players further at the field is, give me a 50-50 chance. And as Skehel said there, make sure there's someone coming back. So if the 50-50 ball is coming in, I'm going to spoil it. I'm going to block it back out. But we need someone just winning those breaks. When it gets to a stage, and this was something, you know, with us with Kilkenny for, you know, around the 2016 period on for quite a few years for a couple of years, we kind of struggled with adjusting to that, where half back line would drift out. And that's the other thing, is the safeguard of the half back line drifting out past the 45 towards the 65 and ball being landed in behind them. Because, okay, if that's a 50-50 ball, that's fine. But if you now have the situation where a half back line are drifting out and you're isolated what we often see with teams now is a two-person full forward line, you have two full backs in there, cornerback and a fullback, whatever, and you're now competing a 70-30 ball with a forward like Aaron Gillan and the cavalry are nowhere to be seen, it now becomes a situation where your best case scenario is you're trying to tackle them, but now also there's a situation where you could get drawn into fouls, you get drawn into yellow cards. So that's, like, systematically, that's the big problem that you don't want your full back line to be facing. Like, Cork have actually been, you know, when I saw them against Kilkenny kept landing ball towards the D, and Cork were really good at they were sitting back and Kilkenny didn't, like, were just landing balls on top of them. The problem is when you're playing Limerick is teams will commit bodies to that middle area. So they want to win the ball in and around the midfield. That means committing bodies. It means your half back line going in trying to win it. If your half back line are in midfield and you don't win that ruck, now the lads are isolated. So that's how we're getting to that situation of your full back line being isolated. So it's a systematic thing. It's not just a simple case of someone gets a ball out the field, landed in on top of number 15. It's not that. There's a whole process happening whereby a team has to have an understanding. And it touches back to what Skehel is saying there as well. It's having those other defenders sweeping back. Like, even if it's a case the half back line get committed, our midfielders tracking back, how far the half forward line coming out. All these things feed into how a fullback or a cornerback can actually mark the man effectively, not fouling them, and realistically compete. Realistically for a ball, not being kind of, I hope I'm just going to keep him outside me and hope he doesn't take me on, and because we see the likes of Galan popping balls over from the sideline, it doesn't matter to them. So there's a few things at play, but all I'd be saying as a fullback, to bring it back to very basics, be asking the lads out around the half hour line, don't let the lads get their head up. If make them shoot off the back, or not shoot, make them strike the ball at the back foot. And then all you're asking then is that your five and your seven, or whoever, even your six, they're flooding back when you're coming out. So all you have to do is spoil it. And on a very basic turn, that's all you're looking for.
But as well, nobody has learned how to deal with the limit corner four coming out into the third, middle third.
No.
So if that's David Reedy, or even Adam English was named at 15 sometimes, you know, Peter Kay, nobody has understood how to deal with him. And he's the big issue. If you can deal with him, because obviously when he comes out, you've got a numerical disadvantage unless you bring him back with you.
Yeah.
So if you sit your defender in front of your full back line, you're going to get killed from distance. They're going to score 30 points in you.
Yeah.
And if you decide to follow him, really won't end up in a set position. He could be in wing back this minute. Next thing, Adam English or Colin O'Neill take over that roaming role. And it's very hard for people to get adjustment on that. So that's why the matchups, I said, Limerick are a matchup nightmare. You could put someone who is fast on Colin O'Neill. Colin O'Neill could just go into corner forward for a few minutes. Yeah. And next thing, your speed is just negated. So I just think that, again, they've been embarrassment riches, which we said before, but nobody's figured out how to deal with that. You can deal with the middle third. It's like when nobody could figure out how to deal with 20K that year, and then they put Mikey Butler on just to follow him. And look how that adjusts to Kilkenny's performance, and likewise how just declares for the badge. So, but the thing is, Limerick have just those options, and no two hurlers the same. So, like English, O'Neill, Hegarty, Casey, really five different types of hurler, five different types of matchup. So the one person might necessarily suit them, whereas most of the Cork forwards, again, correct me now if I'm wrong, Murph, the likes of Connolly, you know, Barrett, even, you know, Dodd, they're kind of, a lot of them, you know, they don't have a specific trait that you couldn't mark with the one person. Do you know what I mean? Like if you were going marking them five now, you'd be happy enough to take care of them.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You'd be happy enough that you're like, I'm not going to be able to be depth here. Yeah.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. It's just that it's just different. Like the skill, when I look at Adam English, the skill base is crazy. Colin O'Neill, the speed and his shooting distance. You know, David Reedy is always around the middle. Peter Casey is so elusive. You can't get him, let's say, when he's turning on a sixpence and shooting. It's just so different. Hegarty's a behemoth.
Yeah,
you know, they provide so many different options and challenges for opposition coaches that I think it's so hard for opposition coaches to figure it out. Hence why I think Cork brought in, if I'm honest, they brought in that long, long puck out and created a small bit of pandemonium. That's why I think they brought in, because they couldn't get through them. Tipperary couldn't go through them. Let's say building phases, they kept getting turned over. So fuck it. Let's just wire it down there and let's see what happens. And hey, that was the first time it worked.
I think go back to the Peter Casey point. Like, one of the things that's different, and I'll use Peter Casey and Tony Kelly as examples. Like, Peter Casey comes out from the full forward line, and if you don't follow him, they'll use him. And if you follow him, they won't use him. Like, so if you follow him and he's marked, get it into Galan. If you don't use him, they'll give it to. And so you're damned if you do and damned if you don't. And it overlaps then. Like, what I was mentioning earlier about the younger players understanding the system so well, that's why they can slot in. So let's say, for example, you follow Peter Casey out the field, and Peter Casey draws you away looking for the ball. But if you're marking him, he's bringing you out of the way. And now suddenly you have runners flooding through the centre. So that's where I'm saying that they use him. Okay, if you're not marking him, hit him with the ball. If you're marking him, those runners are just going to run straight through the middle because they're drawing you out of position. And the reason I think it's actually different than marking the likes of Tony Kelly, when that proposition was there for Mikey Butler to mark Tony Kelly against Clare, yes, Clare had an abundance of forwards, but very much it was viewed that if you could shut down Tony Kelly, like at that time, Tony Kelly was, you know, shooting the lights out. So if you could shut him down, you were shutting down a fairly sizable arm of the Clare scoring, and it was simply a case of following him and denying possession. Following Peter Casey is different to following Tony Kelly, because you also have to follow Peter Casey but know when to let go of him and go running and get involved with the play, because that's another thing you have to do with Limerick. You can't just be passively marking your man, denying him possession. You have to actually be proactively running into rooks, taking on the ball, and when you have possession, not being afraid to leave your Peter Casey, or not being afraid to leave your Garrod Hegarty and actually be involved. So I actually, you know, I think it's a fairly layered challenge when it's not just marking one man against Limerick. It's the second and third order effects afterwards.
Can I give you a formation, Murph?
A which? A formation?
I haven't seen a jet against Limerick. Stick with me here for a second.
God knows where this came from. Go on.
I'm always looking at how to beat them. You know. Just stick with me now. The formation hurling is obviously 1-3. Forget about the goal for a second.
We haven't left.
3-3-2-3-3. That's the formation, right?
Yeah.
Picture this now. Picture 2-1-3-3-2-4-1. Picture that, right? You're going, what the fuck?
Where's the four coming from here?
So picture your keeper inside, okay? Obviously. Mm-hmm. Picture two and three tight enough. Picture number four or whoever on the D, top of the D, right? Picture 5, 6, 7 across your half back line. Picture 8, 9, 10 across your midfield. Picture 11 and 12 in that channel between your 8, 9, 10, you okay?
Mm-hmm.
And picture 13 and 14, let's say, in on the outside challenge, if you like me, and 15 isolated inside. Do you get me?
Yeah.
Now you've covered space and you've covered minutes. Very hard to get through because you've got a heap of numbers. You've got a spare man at the back, but you have to have a ferocious athlete up front because he's he or she is going to be, or he is going to be running all day long. I was going to say she. I have a habit of saying that word, sorry.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah.
So, anyone who's listening, bring that for information. Let's have a look at it. I'm dying to see it.
You're not going to throw the match anymore. You're just going to throw a new formation out there instead.
So I say you're the opposite of the lads who want to throw the match for next week. You actually are going to go, pre-championship, I'm going to show the perfect formation to take these boys down. There's a few curious decisions during the game. One that really stood out was, I think there were two foul hand passes that were called. And the one that was called from Keane Lynch was the cleanest hand pass you'll ever see.
Right. What?
The four boys in TG Carr had to go, I think they were trying to be not too critical of Sean Stack after it happened, but once we saw the replay, it was like the clearest hand pass emotion you'll ever see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know there was one that Will O'Donoghue who did a kind of what I'm going to call almost like his patented cartwheel pass that got pulled as well. That was a throw. But the Keane Lynch one 100% wasn't. The other one that stood out for me, Skell, was Kyle Hayes' running in on goal. I think that was the same end that Kyle Hayes got a black card for a pull down. He gets absolutely wrestled to the ground when he would goal in mind.
I don't think any supporter that wearing red yesterday would have given out that if a black card was produced there because it was as close to a rugby tackle on a hurling field as you'd see over the course of the weekend, to be fair.
Mm.
And it's why the rule is brought in. And it's as if he made a... See, you've got a technical foul, which is he's trying to play the ball, and you have a tactical foul, which is why he did there last night, to be fair. Mm. I'm interested also to get your thoughts. Do you remember in the first half when it was threatening to get out of hand a little bit? Do you remember Kyle Hayes was making a run up the pitch and he cut inside and his helmet got pulled off him to a degree?
Tommy O'Connell pulled it off, yeah.
What's your thoughts on that, Murph? Is that a red card for you?
Well, the only funny thing I thought about it straight away, I was like, if he did that 3 years ago when the face guard was the niche thing for the elite, he was gone. But the thing was about it was that it was, in one respect, for Kyle Hayes, it was lucky the straps weren't on the helmet because it would have jerked his neck. And the thing was he grabbed the face guard, you know. So like, if we're talking black and white here, Tommy O'Connell grabbed the face guard. He was lucky because I think if I talk about both of those instances, I think Kyle Hayes that was exactly what Kyle Hayes did to Shane Kingston down in Páirc Uí Chaoimh a couple of years ago. It was 2 years ago.
Great.
when the penalty was given. That Patrick Corrigan scored and drew the match. I think that was won it. But it was identical for that. So I actually thought that's exactly what the black card was brought in for. And I think it was it a Donoghue fouled him or was it Joyce fouled him? Whoever it was, I think they were kind of half expecting it because I was looking at their reaction as well. Two arms around him, pulling him down. That's exactly what it's there for. So I think that was black card. And then, yeah, he's lucky. He's lucky Tommy O'Connell is lucky because he just grabbed the face card and pulled the helmet.
I thought it was red, Murph. Because Tommy O'Connell, would he be 5'9", 5'10"?
I'd say that, yeah.
Kyle Hayes is 6'5", every bit of it, every 6'5". So, like, first of all, that's a head tackle. So, you know what I mean? And then he pulls the guard. I know people will say Kyle Hayes is kind of falling over, bending over, fine, but it's still a head tackle, like.
Yeah.
For me, like, I know that pulling the face guard and the helmet coming off is obviously the result of a certain type of tackle, but it's a head tackle with the guard coming with it. I thought it was Stonewall red card.
Yeah, I think what it was like obviously Tommy O'Connell was going in to get a tackle on him, and I think it wasn't like a red miss descended thing or anything, but I think he did it not even thinking about it. Exactly. I just think there was no intent in him to actually do anything there, but he suddenly found himself in the position where he was after grabbing the helmet, and he actively grabbed it. So like again, you don't want to see players sent off like needlessly or anything, but at the same time, I was kind of going, I was like, I'd agree with you. I think you brought it up this under the banner of things were starting to get kind of out of hand a little bit like there. And one bad tackle in those instances, like you go back another one, Kyle Hayes. And I don't actually think Kyle Hayes was in the wrong here. I think it was more the Cork player threw themselves into tackle. Kyle Hayes had a big pull at one stage. And I think Tim O'Mahony might have been coming through. and he broke the hurl and whatever. And it was it was actually the tackle just before the kind of the scuffle happened. Remember that scuffle there in the first half? That I wouldn't actually put that down to, and this isn't defending Kyle Hayes to the last, but I wouldn't put that down to to the fact that he pulled wildly. Where he was coming at that, he was entitled to pull, and the Cork player jumped in, and it looked more than it was. But at that stage of the match, it was on the borderline of seeing another 30-man melee. Like, this is what we want to see. So, it was the likes of that Tommy O'Connell one. It could have gotten a little bit out of hand there, but thankfully...
It's not like rugby, Murphy. What did it for me in the finish was, you know, rugby, you have high tackles nowadays. You don't hit for tackles specifically. You know? And there's always all about mitigating factors where the defender could be falling or the tackle could be falling.
Yeah.
And the keeper yellow. That was... The only thing to say of Tommy Conlon yesterday, I think, was the fact, which you just said, it was the straps were open.
Yeah.
If the straps are closed, he's out the door, you know. And the fact that the straps were open, it was, and Kyle was kind of going down a bit, they're the mitigating factors that stop you from getting red. Because still, for me, it's a head challenge. You're pulling the head off him.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not his intention to do a specific movement. Maybe it wasn't intent to pull it. But I thought it was one where I think the referee was using his own discretion.
Yeah.
Where he went away from the objective rule of the law, which is, okay, grab the face guard, got to put him off. You know, and thought with a bit of logic, maybe it's not a stonewall red card as some people may think at home. So, but he was kind of fully performance last night, Stack. I thought he was up and down a bit. You know, some of the challenges that were going in, I thought was, you know, like rugby, I thought there were just arms everywhere and how you're supposed to play the ball. So,
yeah.
But it was that fly. I did say, of course, I have to put my hand up last week. I did say, I hope the ref lets it off. But you know what I mean when I say that? when I say that, you know, call the fouls for God's sake, but like, that, you know,
just before we move on to 1B and what's happened there this weekend, Edwina Shanahan was in contact overnight as well. Just said something she wanted to point out. She said, massive shout out to Cork and Limerick players who stayed in the pitch for ages to sign autographs and do photos with the kids afterwards, and particularly Nicky Quaid, Barry Walsh, Aaron Gillan, Colin O'Neill were really, really good at their time. Says that's what makes the sport so special and unique. Fantastic people after the game. So good to hear they stayed around. Yeah. I saw loads of the photos in Sportsfile of a lot of those players from both teams being mobbed at full time. There's a decent crowd in as well. I know it'll be a bigger crowd in a few weeks' time when they play in the championship, but at the same time, again, good crowd in for that, and decent fare, I think, on a Saturday night overall in the league. Unfortunately, with the sad bereavement of Mikey Kiley's dad, Benny, in Waterford, which meant that the other game in Division 1A wasn't played this weekend, so it was postponed. My understanding as we record on this Sunday night is it's going to be played on Saturday of next week because they want to have a 7-day period for the last round. So that neither team would be inconvenienced. But especially after what happened to Kilkenny, that game has a lot of importance when it is played next week between Waterford and Tipperary, because looking at the table in front of me at the moment, Limerick and Cork both on 8 points. So that means avoid defeat for either of them and they're into the league final. You've got Limerick playing against Galway, Cork are at home against already relegated Offaly. Kilkenny round off their campaign against Tipperary. We've got 2 games left. So Tip can still technically get to 8. So let's not rule them out entirely from getting to the league final, but obviously it's not in their own hands at this stage. And then you need Waterford, who will probably need a result, because Waterford on head-to-head with Kilkenny are behind and they currently sit on 4 points. So it's a particularly big game for Waterford next week when that game is played next Saturday. So that's what's happened in Division 1A. In Division 1B on the weekend just gone by, we did get one game on the TV today and we got to see the highlights of the others. But just before we talk about today's game, huge win for Dublin, which has now put them right to the fore of the promotion race. So John Heatherton, I think, has 5 or 6 goals now in the league this year. So getting the ball into him is paying dividends for Dublin. He scored 2-3 from play in their win against Down, 6-32 to 18 points. So Dublin have shot the lights out against both Antrim and Down, which has been hugely influential to their scoring difference. You say, why is scoring difference important? It's head-to-head. Well, Wexford and Dublin drew in the league, so scoring difference will be beneficial to Dublin going into the last round. So they won very comfortably at Parnell Park, 6-32 to 18 points. Upshot of that then was a little bit of pressure on Wexford to get a result against Clare today. Clare changed the team around a little bit. This was the TV game this afternoon. But Clare making it 6 wins from 6. Brian Lowen said afterwards he didn't want to lose momentum by losing the game against Wexford today. They came through 26 points to 120. Peter Duggan with 8 points. He was on the free-taking duties for Clare and Ennis. Wexford had a kind of an inspired comeback towards the end of the game, but time ran out for them. Lee Chin with 11 points, 8 from frees. Simon Roach took the goal from them. He scored 1-6 in all from play, where he was their top scorer. But Wexford across the 70 minutes only had 5 scorers, and one of them being their goalkeeper, Mark Fanning. So we did wonder about this scale a few weeks ago, whether for Wexford there's just too much of a scoring a dependency on a few players. I know Jack O'Connor, their new captain, will come back from the knee injury in a few weeks. Rory's heading off to Australia. But again, a familiar story. You know, Lee Chin does a lot of the scoring. Roach obviously gets the 1-6 as well. But Wexford didn't have the spread of scorers in Ennis today.
No, like, I remember a couple of weeks ago we were saying there was genuine concern for Wexford. I was more pointing towards the youth, really, Will. Say that that the cavalry weren't coming as of yet. And I think it was evident today. Like, I watched this game top to bottom, and it always felt like Clare were like a 6-point better team. I know the scoreline didn't show that at times, but just the quality up front in the difference between Clare and Wexford was vast. You know what I mean? It really was vast. And Wexford, like, they'll be based upon the performances against the two top teams in that division, Dublin and Clare. And they've been, you know, the Dublin game, okay. So the Clare game, very poor. I thought they were poor. I really thought they were poor today. I thought defensively they were really poor. Midfield, I thought they were very bad. And from a forward perspective, it was very off the cuff. I couldn't get a pattern or style of play off them. You know what I mean? I couldn't figure out what they were trying to achieve. And I've only said that about one team during the podcast. That was Antrim last year, where I was watching them saying, what's their objective? Is it long ball? Is it diagonal? Is it carrying? You know, and the position of Kevin Foley full forward, I thought would become more of a running game, delivered to the corners for him. Happened once in the first half. He got a lovely pint out on the stand side. After that, you know, the goal, decent, but it's just not enough. Like, and when you look at Leinster at the moment, you think, are Wexford getting further away from the top three? And I'd have to say the answer is yes. You know, and I'm not trying to be difficult or harsh on Wexford. I just think it's the truth. I think Dublin after last year are going to build. They're going to be better this year. I think they're the dark horse of Leinster. I think, personally speaking, I would always consider the third place battle for Leinster would have always been Dublin and Wexford. Not trying to be dismissive. I know we got caught there ourselves at times, but I think Kilkenny and Galway are still the clear two. But Dublin, I think, have caught up to the pack. And you might say, what evidence do you have? And they haven't played a Division One team, you know, I suppose for age, got clear. I just think they're coming. And the worry is that Wexford, the gap gets larger and larger. And to lead on to another game, did you watch Kildare today?
I watched the deferred coverage of it afterwards.
Jesus, yeah. I thought they were shooting the lights out.
Yeah. Very clinical as well. They went ages Burns without widening that game as well.
But I thought it was Jimmy Burns playing for what you can do, but was your man Dolan? I don't know this as well as I should. Paul Dolan, is it Paul Dolan? Wing back?
Yeah.
Number 5. Mm-hmm. 4 points in play, first half. I mean, Jesus. Like, I was very impressed with him, not to move off Wexford, but I just think the story of the league so far is how the upward curve is Kildare, and unfortunately, in the same trajectory, the opposite way is Wexford, which is worrisome. You know, and I don't know, is that a bigger issue with regards to numbers, clubs, etc.? I don't want to get into that, but I'm delighted for Kildare. As I said, they're my second team. But Wexford, I just have a concern. I have a concern with them across the board from a hurling perspective. And today's result, the result is the result. But watching the game, geez, I don't know what you think, Murph. I thought they were very distinctly average now, to be honest.
And they were, the game in itself, it almost had the feel of a pre-season friendly, but like pre-championship game that would have been organised. Like, it was flat enough. Clare went about their business, and Clare were the better team over the course of the entire game. Now, although Wexford brought it back to, you know, 3 points, I think it finished in the end, and they had opportunities for kind of dodgy balls landed in around the box. I'd agree with you from the point of view that I couldn't see any sort of coherency to what they were really doing and what they were about, you know. So, and there was huge space at different times. Like, there was, I think, was it Rin got a point there in the first half and he ran onto it. And I think he might have even missed the rise and he got a second chance to rise. And then he just stood up and he settled himself and was able to, you know, tap the ball over the bar. And that was about a 5-second period there where nobody came near him. So it's just, there's so many parts of it there where it was like, in certain instances, you see Wexford committing a lot of players to the ball, and then suddenly Clare would come out of a ruck or something, and there would be lads all over the place free for Clare, and Clare were just popping over a few scores afterwards. Yeah. So, I was looking at it kind of going, yeah, I'm not really sure here. Like, you can see that there's a few really good individual players with Wexford, and you can see that there's, you know, there is an effort there to, I suppose, pose a real big threat to Clare today, but you just couldn't see it happening. Even though it was tighter coming down the home stretch, and it was a one-score game, you just didn't feel that Clare were going to lose it either. So
that's what six starters were. That's all they had. Clare only had six starters, as far as I can see.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, a lot of forwards, we wouldn't know these lads. And then you're talking about, you know, we've seen Sean Rin of last year, but like, and Jack O'Neill to a degree, but then this Niall O'Farrell and Jeremy Stritch. You know, guys that I you know, from underage, obviously, following, but from a senior's perspective, you wouldn't think for them to have the impact as they should. And that's what worries me from Wexford. Like, Wexford had a strong team out, as strong as possibly go, and you're thinking to yourself, this, you know, if you're looking at a team in Division 1, be as in Clare, who, you know, have already qualified, in terms of motivation, Will, they don't have a huge amount of motivation because they know they already know their destination.
Mm-hmm.
And they play six starters. You're thinking, this is a good chance in order to get one over them. And no. And again, it sounds like I'm bashing Wexford. I am not bashing Wexford. I'm just saying there's concern here for the future. And what's the fix? I don't know.
Well, look, I think if you're Brian Lowen, you're really happy about this, though. Like he was saying after the game, you know, it was about keeping the winning going and all that. But also, aside from that, we talked about Cork trying players out. Like Clare have kind of targeted the games where they have changed players out. And it was almost, they knew they had to beat Dublin early on, so they went really, really strong in that first game. They get points on the board, win the games they're expected to win. And now they can kind of just ease into the final a little bit. I think they'll play a slightly stronger team going into the final itself. And then they'll just build into Munster Championship. And their feeling might be that actually, you know what, they've looked at the depth of the panel. And at the same time, they've also got valuable time into players early in the year. You know, Tony Kelly, Shane O'Donnell, these guys have played a little bit more hurling than even they played in 1A over the last two seasons. They're ready to go now for Munster, and the feeling is they're on a winning run as the way they're going. I'm with you where I'd be concerned about Wexford. You were saying as well about concerning about the Kildare result. I tell you, if you're an Offaly supporter, even more worried now at this point. The graphic comes out last week, you know, with the Leinster fixtures and all the times have been set now at this point and so on. It's like, oh, Dublin at home, first game, yeah, it could be an interesting one. Wexford at home as well, maybe that's one they can target. And then you just see Kildare, Newbridge in the last round and you're just thinking, please tell me Offaly do not have to go to Newbridge in the last round and get a result, because what Kildare have done so far, I was texting you earlier about this, Gil. I agree with you. A few weeks ago, you said, you know, story of the league so far is this Kildare team. And again, they've done it again today. Like, you know, Mears Curtin's been scoring loads of goals throughout the league. Colin McCabe gets a goal and Gearan got the other goal for them today. They beat Carlow comprehensively. They were well in front at halftime. The goals then gave them that bit of extra cushion in the second half. They win this comprehensively. Like, we were wondering last week, was this going to be tight? Yeah. Kildare 3-22, Carlow 1-19. As if Carlow in an absolute mire when it comes to relegation at the bottom of the second flight as well. But this Kildare team have gone up, and we talked about all the targets they had. Getting a win in 1B, that win against Antrim, which is the first one since the 80s. Are they going to back that up? Now they've won three games out of their five so far. Guaranteed to stay in Division 1B for next year. Yeah. I was listening to Brian Dowling on KCLR after the game because I was listening to the tail end of the match, and he was saying to Oisín Langan on KCLR, you know what, mathematically we're not out of the promotion race just yet. Maybe we can go and beat Wexford this coming weekend as well. That to me was kind of an indication of the thought process.
Yeah, like, come here. I said last week about the manifestation of these things. You know, why not? Why not go for it? And I find it really enjoyable. And like, maybe this is, forgive me this gentleman, but I didn't know a lot of these Kildare players up to this year. Truthfully speaking, like over the last couple of years, you know, we've talked about them and saying the Joe Mack and whatnot. I didn't know an awful lot of them. I'm getting to know them now, and it's enjoyable getting to know new players that you wouldn't have tracked at an underage level. I personally wouldn't have tracked a lot of these lads, any of them, to be honest. I don't know them from college. I don't know them from the club game. And now I'm seeing them in an intercounty game, and they're producing results. I'm like, geez, this is really enjoyable. This is new. This is fresh. It's really good for the game. I hope more people get behind it. And I don't hear enough of it. This should be on the radio. They should get more highlights in the Sunday game. And like, this is how you promote the game. You know, to a point, you look at the and I mean this, well, the weaker counties and push their results better. Like, I was really surprised. I couldn't get over your man Paul Dolan today, to be honest. I was like, this lad scored 4 points. And I think the Newbridge, which looks like a lovely stadium, never there before, but when you head for that last fixture, Will, awfully coming into town, potentially packed out, squeaky bum time, as they say. Squeaky bum time.
That's for sure. No, look, they've got form behind them. So, like, again, 5 played, 6 points on the board. It would take a little bit to go on their way in the last game, but they play Wexford, so they could get to 8 points potentially. They'd need Dublin to slip up against Carlow if Kildare were to sneak into second place. But why not be aspirational? Why not go to Wexford Park and try and win that game?
These players, Murphy, say, I know, I call this your neck of the woods over the side of the country. Would you have no mind these lads now through, like, underage or schools or...
No, not through underage schools or anything like that. No.
So you're in the same position as me. Like, you're learning about them as in the present.
Yeah, like the only way I would have seen some of these lads would have been mostly through the likes of Nace and different places like that. Like having been going well in different things, but no, I don't, to my knowledge, would have come across them in any other capacity other than that. The other thing to say as well, I think we've kind of mentioned it a few weeks here, but I think Brian Dowland himself had a great weekend because he was involved in Kieran's. And Kieran's, in fairness, Nina CBS are a savage team. And Nina CBS were in the lead, I'd say, for 59 minutes of that game. And obviously Kieran's, I think Kieran's by their own admittance, kind of, you know, got out of jail, and not say got out of jail as if, like, you know, they were the favourites or anything, but like Nina CBS were outstanding. And so but Brian Dowling turned around after, I'm sure the nerves shattered after that, to turn around into Carlo today. So yeah, it's a fair journey for him and a fair weekend for him as well. But no, look, Kildare have been outstanding, and I agree with you, Skell, and will both of you like that. There's so many teams, like, you know, and I know it looks like Laois are going to come up anyway from Division 2.
2A,
sorry, 2A. But, like, it's a case where Kildare will be the example to any of those teams as to basically say, why not? Do you know, because it's great that, and I probably put Brian Dowling's mention there of, geez, we're not out of promotion here yet. I echo that in the same line as I said about Dan Shanahan a few weeks ago, saying, oh, well, we're aiming for a Munster final. Why not aim for that? Like, why not just aim for that? And if at the end of it, and the dust settles and it's all done and dusted and you didn't make it or whatever, well, at least you can say we tried, you know. So I just love the positive talk around it, and that we have a great positive example as well.
Bottom of the table in 1B then, nobody's relegated, despite the fact that Down have lost 5 out of 5 and are minus 80 scoring difference because of the way things might fall in the last weekend. So I saw someone say you should just call it the Ulster hurling final, the last game, because Down will play Antrim. It's Down for Norrie at the moment in 2 weeks' time. Antrim have got 2 points. Carlo have got 2 points. Down have got no points. But if Down were to win, potentially they get on to 2, and maybe they pull themselves out of it right at the end of it. Because Carlo, who have 2 points on the board, which was their win against Down, will play against Dublin, where Dublin will be expected to win. Now, I appreciate that Down are very much up against it on the scoring difference because of the way things sit, and they probably will be relegated, but technically they're not before the last round. So you've got Down versus Antrim, you've got Carlo versus Dublin, and you've got that game between Kildare and Wexford, which is going to determine things. Clare have a break now before the league final as well, 6 wins from 6. So that's the way 1B sits going into the last round of fixtures in 2 weeks' time. I think we'll preview all these next week. It'll give us a pod for next week to do multiple predictions. And then in Division 2 today, as Murph mentioned, Laois are up. 17-point win against Meath, 28 points to 11 Mossy Keys with 5 points, but they spread the points quite well. Picky Maher back for Laois today, a man who famously did the kitchen. He did the kitchen lighting. Did he do the full kitchen for you, Murph?
He did, yeah. Hanlon's up in
Hanlon, yeah.
Yeah, the old contract for the house. So Picky was inside, and Willie Dunphy and the boys. So
fair enough. He was Willie Dunphy's retired. Danny Hanlon's retired, but Picky was back today from injury. So they'll have him for the league final as well. 100% record for them. He scored a couple of points after coming off the bench. Kerry helped their scoring different situations. So Kerry and Westmeath drew back in round one. So scoring difference will be the determining factor if those two are level at the end. Kerry beat Mayo 6-24 to 14 points. Ushin Monsell with 2 goals for Kerry in that one. And Westmeath got a scare of their lives against Derry today in Mullingar. Westmeath winning in the end 120 to 3 goals and 13 points. David Williams at 110 for them. But that was not good news for Westmeath's scoring difference. They would have been expected, I think, to rack up a score there against a relegated Derry team. But it now means that Westmeath have a scoring difference of just plus 6. And Kerry have got a scoring difference of plus 65. Which means the Westmeath need a favour in the last round. So Kerry go to play against Meath. Now Meath on 6 points can still get to the league final if they were to win that. But they would need Westmeath to slip up against Mayo, which seems pretty unlikely in the last round. Meath do have a Westmeath man and Johnny Greville in charge, but you would think the Kerry, who've now finished the season with a bit of strength, will be the big favourites to join Laois in the final. Laois round off their campaign away to London, 1 o'clock Saturday week. Same time you've got Mayo versus Westmeath and Meath versus Kerry. One other thing that I wanted to touch on with both of you before we finish this, we'll talk about it in the members' pod in a lot more detail, Murph. The streaming wars, which are about to happen. So my reading of this is the Irish Examiner's reporting of a policy document which they've seen from the GAA. And the one part that really stands out, I just pulled a few of the highlights out to have a look at them here. We might talk about Friday night games on the members' pod as well. But the one that really stands out here, whatever with the advertising, which we can come back to as well, but the policy also claims that RT and TG Car's rights to allow club championship games have been strengthened by the streaming policy and licensing agreement. As the club championships come under the existing rights by the GAA to both RT and TG Car, GAA units are not permitted to stream the match unless they get special dispensation. Now, you remember Jarlett Burns last year was complaining that county boards didn't want to give away their county finals, particularly on Saturdays, to be shown on the TV because there was more money to be made from streaming. So then we get this crucial line, which is a little bit vague, but is intriguing. All streaming requests must now be made 6 weeks in advance, and GAA units are not permitted to stream a match at the same time as any national broadcast partner coverage. So that has been interpreted in some quarters, Murph, and I think understandably interpreted in this way, that could mean that if TG Car or RTÉ are showing a game, so if that's 3:30 on the Sunday county final season or 7:00 the night before, club or stream store might not be able to show a game. If that happens in the height of club season, when they do most of their subscriptions and everything else, the streaming services are effect.
Yeah, and I think it's left deliberately vague because when I was reading it, I was waiting for you to clarify, was I reading it correctly there? So I think it is left deliberately vague. The way I'm reading it is that it's essentially, I'm reading it in the worst case scenario, that this is a case that Clubber and was it Stream, is it, sorry, is it Stream Sport?
Stream Sport, the most.
Yeah. Like that these lads are effectively, there's so many hurdles being put up in front of these lads. And I'll be honest, I have a subscription for Clubber. It's the best thing that has happened in a long time. And I'm sure Stream Sport is in exactly in the same category. Like, I thought of so many times over the summer where, let's say we were hurling a match of a Sunday evening or Saturday evening or something like that, and you'd be hanging around the house or something, and you'd be watching a game. It could be Mike Harkey Boris or someone like this. It could be playing someone, you know, and you just throw it on because it was great to watch it. Or you could be watching a game from Cork or a game from Waterford. They had 105 games, and this isn't advertising for them. This is just advocating for them. They had 105 games on weekend. And these are games that aren't going to be shown anywhere else anyway. Like, you know, they're not going to be on RT. They're not going to be on TG Car. Harty Cup, all these games. They're not going to be anywhere else. So if I'm reading it the way I'm reading it, it's just a simple case that if there's one game on RTÉ or TG Car, these lads can't do anything. And like for the Kilkenny County final, for an example, Stream Sport don't cover it, but Clubber don't do the county final if TG4 take it. So TG4 take it. Clubber don't do it anyway. It's just TG4 has it and off you go. But if they don't take it, if TG4 don't show county final, as they didn't take the Kilkenny County final in 2025, Clubber took it and said, here we go, we're going to show it. We're sitting here so many weeks going, like, all these other games that aren't on television of a busy weekend, let's say Football League and Hurling League are on the same weekend, there's so many games that aren't captured. We're actually talking about the example of, we should be giving these games to those streamers and let people watch the sport, because that's what it comes down to, let people watch the sport. This is a step completely in the other direction. This is a step to put as many hurdles in front of these people as we can. And I think it's one, I really think this is something that is puts the sponsors first ahead of GAA people watching sport. That's, for me, where it comes down to. I know you have to look after sponsors. I know you have to protect that relationship. But for me, this is a case of, well, do we want people to watch the sport, or do we want to make sure a few people aren't a little bit upset that a small local menswear is sponsoring a game down in Tipperary while, you know, a big firm is sponsoring the GAA? We're getting into small, minute things there. And I just think everything about this, I think, is such a backward step for GAA.
So two simultaneous things happen at the one time here. I can understand that the rights holders want to protect their rights. I also can understand that sponsors who are paying quite a bit of cash to get on the national broadcast want to get the most bang for their buck. On the other hand, as Murph says, Jimmy's Pub decides to give a bit of money to a streaming service, and that allows them to get really localised sponsorship because their club is in a county final or a county semi-final or wherever it might be. To me, seems crazy that they would actually be fighting against the bigger companies involved here. And also, when it comes to the rights agreement itself and the streaming, I think this gets shot down. And the reason I think that this gets shot down is that a lot of county boards, ones that stand out for me would be Galway, Armagh, Westmeath in recent times, have done big business selling the rights effectively to their own games by streaming them. There's no way that they're going to want to turn around under this rights agreement and say, actually, there's no way we can show these. And I think they'll be even less inclined to give away their county finals if they feel that they're being pushed by a contract in order to do so. And if you have a pre-existing agreement, and I think in some of these cases they've been paid quite a bit of money by the streaming companies over the course of a few years, to just say, well, actually, you know what, right in the middle of the agreement right now, if there's a game on RT at 7:00 on a Saturday, you guys aren't going to be able to show our local championships. There's no way the county boards are going to allow this to happen. This document might be well-meaning, and it may well be a way of keeping TG Car and RT on board, particularly as the primary TV rights holder scale. But if at some point they turn around and tell county boards that you cannot broadcast at the peak time that they want fixtures to be on, I think of your county in Galway at the moment where the lights in Salt Hill have become basically what the streaming shows, you know, because of, you know, it's dark at that end of the season. The amount of Saturday night matches we've had. I remember last year there was like a huge amount of people who bought subscriptions or one-offs to watch the Galway football final particularly. There's no way like, for example, Galway County Board would be okay with being told that, well, actually, because the Monaghan football final is on RT at the moment, you can't stream your final.
No, I think if I go back a few years ago, one of the good things to come out of COVID, and I mean, you know what I mean, this now, was this, was this service. Because I remember distinctly watching games the year after COVID, club games that we never had access to before, and watching them with great enthusiasm because they were from counties I'd never see. I would never get the chance to see a Tipperary group club match. The only Tipperary club match I'd see would have been their county final. So to see more games and get a feel for, you know, the season as a whole was great. It was super. And then that grew within another step whereby county boards could actually benefit and help run their teams. So the thing that I find very important to establish here is county boards will stream their games as a method of funding for funding their teams. That's it. So when I see a policy change or a policy initiation, I always ask, well, who's the benefit? Does it benefit the consumer, the provider, or somebody else? And in this instance, it's somebody else. Okay, so it's not us as fans of the GAA. It's not the provider, the actual GAA. It's the, you know, the somebody else. And we know who the somebody else is. It's not even a governing body. It's just someone who is banging on the table because they're sponsoring us. Right? And I just think it's a backward step. I think the more forward step and the more kind of ingenuity the GAA comes up with in getting games into households, all the better. It's all the better for me. If you get games onto phones and tablets and TVs, super, right? And I think over the last 5-6 years, the likes of Clubber and Stream Sport have nearly perfected that. They haven't blocked rights to the games. They show great highlights, let's say, on, you know, and as Murphy touched on it, on every grade, whether it be an under-20 county final in Galway, right? Or, as you said, a Hearty Cup final in other places. It just provides such access for everyone to watch. And I'm just thinking about the parent who can't go to the Hearty Cup final. I'm just, you know, I think about a parent who can't go to the under-20 final, let's say, that they have access to the game wherever they may be. It's just, it's a great step, and it's the right step. And sometimes principle comes into this. Not so hard about finance. You know, from a principal perspective, the right thing to do, right, is allow the streamers to get more games. We've always praised Chichi Cahar for the service they provide in club games, right?
Yeah.
But now let's go a step further. You know, there's loads and loads and loads of games to show. There's thousands of games throughout the course of the year between Camogie, hurling, football. There's loads to show, like, and there's loads for everyone to show and everyone to make a pound. But not one big conglomerate can take it all. You know what I mean? Yeah. So that's the key thing I want to stress to people. When a policy comes into place, who is it benefiting? The provider, the consumer, or somebody else? And if it's somebody else, that's a big problem.
And the one thing I was thinking as well, is this not just a bit of healthy competition for that kind of benefits the GAA? Because so we have a situation here where, let's say, RTE or whoever, and like that, I agree with you, TG Carr have done a mighty job, and all their GAA stuff that they produce is brilliant stuff.
Yeah.
But there's a whole swath of matches that just don't get picked up on, and they will never fall into the ballpark of RTE wanting to pick them up. So now let's say streaming companies have come through and county boards have done their own thing and they've said, well, actually, we're going to capture these and we're going to monetize them and we're going to make it a bit better. So for the 100 games that we would show, let's say we'll call it 100 games that we might show in a season, this is all going to fall apart because our team mightn't be able to get our county final. All those other games are going to be gone essentially because they want our county final. And even if we look at the county final as a standalone, and we'll use Galway as an example, if Galway are saying our product, our county final, I know the GAA will say it's theirs, but Galway county final, we're making X amount of money off that, i.e. we're making more money through the streamers by streaming it out. But the GAA wants to turn and say, no, you'll take less money to put it on the national broadcaster. And also, you're going to lose everything for the rest of the year. Essentially, because it's so vague, we have to take it that it's going to be, that is the language that's around it. I just think there's so many aspects to this that it's like, probably exactly what you're saying there, Scahill, that it's, you have to question, who is this really benefiting? It's not benefiting the GAA. Yeah. This is not benefiting the GAA. And the last point I'd make is like, and again, this is probably a very sentimental thing or whatever. There's so many people who go to work, like who'll be working weekends there when the club championships are on. And this is a way that they get to watch their matches. They get to watch the games. And I genuinely, like, I have so many fond memories over summer there of you're doing a few bits around the house at the weekend, you're cutting the grass, you're doing whatever, and you're keeping an eye on a match. It's a match you've no vested interest in. I watched so much of the Tipperary Club Championship this year just because it was on. And like, it was a camera on a field, and there was 40 lads at the match, and it might have been Tipperary Intermediate Championship. It might have been a mid, you know, it doesn't matter. But I found myself being so interested in it because it was a fantastic product. So I just, as soon as I saw it, I was gobsmacked, to be honest. And I just,
course, can we agree now at this moment in time, right, that the service that, okay, I mean this is the best way I can, right, the service that's been provided during our championships by RTE has been substandard for the last couple of years. We've often sat here and said, we'd love to see the games just for the camera, no production, you know, no studio, that we'd like to see more games. So we're saying that with the streaming, and this is not, Joe, this is not, again, I'm not trying to attack them, but with the streaming services currently in place, right, still the level of games we're getting access to is not enough. It's not enough.
Yeah.
We want more, right? And now if we kind of block those, it's only going to get worse. It'll get worse because production costs will increase for RTE. Well, correct me if I'm wrong now. Production costs will increase if they're to cover more games. And they're not going to do that. They will not do that, right? And I, the last thing, and I finished this myself, is I talked to a very prominent Galway County Board official, right, who explained to me how the streaming service benefits nobody else, just the hurling and camogie teams and the football teams, of course, right? So they use that income to push the teams out and to provide standards better for the players. So it's not as if it's going into some businessman pocket, you know, in Galway City. It's going towards the teams, bus fares, meals, physio, you name it all. Every county board is attributing those costs to running their teams, right? So if Croke Park come along down and say, here, John, we'll do a JP in it, we'll give you all €1 million, then I might talk to them and say, okay, things are different here now, but they don't. So it's up to the county boards to generate their own revenue, and you can't keep going knocking on the door for asking to sell raffle tickets, sell tickets, or this and that, the other. Allow people the choice to buy a service themselves, i.e. streaming service, that they want, that they can actually use, you know what I mean, than a shitty old raffle ticket that they might never win, you know? That's the best way to go forward. Give a service to the public that they'll take. And I know Galway, they make a nice, pretty penny on streaming. And if that income was gone, I don't know where you're going to regenerate it from.
I'd still like to win the raffle, don't get me wrong here. But I would caveat that slightly by saying I think the RTE do a really good job in the 31 championship games that they show. I mean, their coverage is really good. I just think what's happened now is the Pandora's box was opened when it came to streaming in 2020. And understandably, no one had a clue what was going on with the world at the time. And it was, people can't get to the games, we've got to find a way to stream it. And every videographer around the country was just almost sent around, and it was basically a case of, if we can get a van in there and we can stick a guy and a TV crew, that'll do the job. And we'll find trailers and we'll put them up there and we'll do whatever. We'll go to club grounds all over the place and we'll stream as much as we possibly can and we'll see how it works. And it turns out that there was a massive interest in doing it. And as a result, I think people now kind of go, why was there no live coverage of Waterford against Galway to watch anywhere a few weeks ago when it was a really important game? Why are some of the lower championships not being shown? And then you get people like Clubber stepping in to show the Joe McDonagh last year, and I appreciate the hurling hat is on when I'm saying this, but that was inaccessible outside the final. Now it is available by streaming services. You could potentially put these streaming services entirely out of business overnight if these changes are made. And as a result, I think a lot of county boards are going to argue strongly against this. But I would say watch this space, and if you're a member, watch our members pod to talk about this in a bit more detail, because what's happening at the moment is we are slowly but surely edging towards the longest podcast that we have ever done. And the next thing, it'll be like, let's reset and do a members pod and talk about this for another half an hour. So look, this will be out on Sunday night in audio form. The video will be out on Monday, and we'll put the members pod out on Monday as well. But for now, Paul Murphy, thanking you.
Thanks very much, lads.
James Scale, I'll see you in the members pod. I'll see what you think about Friday night games. Friday night games, yes or no, Scale, just before we go.
Load of bollocks.
Right, fair enough. That was not a yes or no answer, but that
was wasn't perfect, yes or no.
That was the perfect teaser for the members pod. We'll see you on that one. Go on, take it easy.
The Hurling Pod.
On Off the Ball.
With Apple Green. Making every journey better.